You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Good to have your company as we build up to one of, if not the biggest, week of the golfing year. The Masters of 2021 is almost upon us. Dave Tindall, as usual, joins me to look ahead to one of the four major championships and played at the iconic Augusta National Golf Club. Dave Tindall, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm geared up for this week. I'm looking forward to it immensely. I can't wait to get your thoughts on Augusta as well. It's going to feel a little bit different going into this year's Masters than it has done previously, with Dustin Johnson claiming his first green jacket only 5 months ago back in November. But yeah, I'm amped up this week. I think we've got hopefully some good bets for you as well, listeners. And I can't wait for it to start on Thursday.
Yeah, me too. It's strange that November Masters, it sort of felt really good to be happening at the time, but now it just seems like a bit of a bonus that was thrown in a bit quick. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. This just seems the proper stuff, doesn't it? I don't know if you've seen the pictures on the official website. All the azaleas are out again. It seems like a proper April, you know, beautiful Masters again.
I think it does. We're top price guaranteed here with William Hill on the top 10. Plus, we are paying 9 places each way as well. Dustin Johnson does head the market, the defending champion at 9-1. Jordan Spieth, 11-1. Bryson DeChambeau is 11-1. Justin Thomas and John Rahm, both 12-1. Rory McIlroy, 18-1. Xander Schauffele is 22s, along with Patrick Cantlay. And it's 28-1 and bigger the rest. And Augusta National failed to really bare its teeth back in November, something that you just alluded to there, Dave. Soft conditions meant it was target golf for the players, really. Cameron Smith became the first player in Masters history to shoot all four rounds in the 60s, and he still didn't win. And the year prior to that, Tiger Woods did something at one point we thought was unimaginable and win another major championship, Dave. But again, in softish conditions. I know you've been watching all those pre-tournament press conferences and getting a feel for what conditions are going to be like in Augusta this week. I get the feeling, having seen a few quotes, that it's going to be reminiscent of maybe the Masters back in 2016, where Danny Willett won, and we're going to see fast, firm conditions, and that's going to produce a different kind of championship.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I think there'll be a reaction. If you look at the history books, when someone does go super low, the green jackets don't like it. They don't like their course to be, you know, have the same score as a regular PGA Tour event. So, yeah, looking back, when Tiger won with minus 18 in 1997, famously, and Mark O'Meara won with 9 under the following year, then you alluded to the Danny Willett one. That came on the back of Jordan Spieth's minus 18 in 2015, mm-hmm. and Danny Willett won with minus 5. 12 months later. So the theory's there that it should be harder, but then if you listen to all the players talking, you know, the actual reality is the same, because so many are just using the words firm and fast, firm and fast. Mm. Adam Scott even went as far as recalling the 2007 Masters as the one that he can last recall when the greens were this firm and fast. That was the one Zach Johnson won in 2007 with, was it plus one, I think?
Yep.
When he famously didn't go for any of the par five. So I don't know if it will be that extreme, but I guess if you're looking at a shorter hitter this week, Adam Scott's words will be quite encouraging, the fact that maybe we'll see a different type of player. I don't know, really, because a lot of those up there in November were just good Masters players anyway. So I think 7 of the top 10 had a previous top 6 at Augusta. So it's kind of different but the same, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, it's a par 72 Augusta National, as I think all our listeners will know by now. It measures just under 7,500 yards. It's a pure, for me, second-shot golf course, and imagination required around the greens, of course, as well. And you've written a trends piece, as you always do, in the lead-up to Augusta. And as you always say, that trends piece that you produce, Dave, is all about the numbers. And probably something that's kind of difficult to convey in that piece is which trends you put most stock in from a betting perspective. I know you put all these numbers together and it churns out trends and a fit, but some of the stats will matter more to you than others, I'd guess.
Yeah, in a way. I mean, they all sort of count in a way, but I guess the very initial ones, I mean, stuff like age is just sort of there, isn't it? Because, you know, I'm sort of trying to come up with various categories, but obviously course form would be a massive one. If you ticked every other box, say you were the right age and you played well this season and played well in Florida and all these other things, if you'd never had a top 50 at Augusta, then it kind of makes everything else a bit moribund, doesn't it?
So
yeah, I think course form is a massive one here, and always will be.
And have you unearthed any little nuggets in the lead up to this championship to suggest what I'm trying to get at here is do we completely disregard? I know you said that lots of the players that contended or finished behind Dustin Johnson in that November Masters were typical Masters performers. Do you put a lot of stock in that Masters still, or given we are likely to have faster, firmer conditions, do you look at a few years ago to that Zach Johnson Masters, or more recently the one that Danny Willett won back in 2016?
It sort of depends how you view it, because you could say, well, because you can't sort of say, well, because he finished second in November, he's now, we're ruling him out because it's now different conditions. Mm. I mean, the sort of positive was that they maybe got to, you know, people like, say, Sung Jae Im or Ant, so they got to play the Masters, this massive, huge thing, in a kind of relatively gentle way. So they don't walk away thinking, oh, my God, I'm never going to be able to play that course again. I mean, they played it without fans. They played it less fiery. But, you know, thinking about those two players, for example, do you remember when they had the President's Cup in Melbourne on a fast, fiery course, fiery course?
Yeah.
You know, it's just because they played well in soft conditions, it doesn't mean to say you now say, well, they can't do the same now. Plus, they've got the recent experience of playing the Masters, because it was only November. They've not had to wait a year, and they can play well in those conditions before. So, yeah, I don't quite know what people want to do with that information in terms of just pour scorn on it, because to me, if you've had a second or a top 10 at Augusta, that's surely a good thing, whatever conditions it was in.
Okay, let's get to the picks then, Dave. I've got three selections. I've looked at the supporting markets, as I know you have as well. So we'll go through the betting now at williamhill.com. Just a reminder, top price guaranteed on the top 10, plus we are paying 9 places. There's a full range of markets, including plenty of hashtag your odds available for the Masters as well. Dave, how many selections do you have in the outright market?
In the outright market, I've just got one, because I focus more on the hashtag your odds ones.
Oh, that's interesting. I've got 3 picks in the outright market and a couple in the supporting markets as well. And I know we've teamed up to give you a hashtag your odds, as we do when there's a major championship. So shall I lead off, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose what I've done in the hashtag your odds is I've combined players together rather than individually.
I get
that. But yeah, you lead off.
Webb Simpson is my number one pick this week at 35-1. I do think, as you mentioned earlier, experience is going to be vital, particularly if it is fast and firm this week. And we've not had a real shock in this major for a good few years, have we? I know Willett was a big price, Dave, but I think he was still ranked inside the top 15 in the world when he won. So I think you're looking for a player with pedigree generally, aren't you? It's not the sort of major where I expect a real rank outsider to pop up.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's a definite bias against Webb Simpson, isn't there? Because he doesn't smash it a mile.
Yeah, and I just get the feeling, like, if it is fast and firm, it's going to be different.
Everything else is being ignored.
I think so, because he's world number nine, Webb Simpson, and he's 20th in the betting this week, or thereabouts. And he was all the rage for the Players' Chamber. I think the performance of the Players has put a few people off because he underperformed there, and that's why he slipped all this way down the betting. I think if you'd have seen a decent Players' Championship finish, Webb Simpson would be 25-1 this week instead of 35-1. I think it probably took him a little bit of time to work out the intricacies of Augusta National, but he seems to have truly got the hang of it now, Dave. 10th back in November, 5th in Tigers Masters win back in 2019 as well. I think conditions are going to be favourable for him, and we don't need the stats to tell us that iron play and short game are going to be crucial, as they always are at Augusta National. And Simpson, for my money, one of the best five or six iron players in the world. Maybe even higher than that, Webb Simpson. Brilliant scrambler at his best too. And one of the courses that correlates well with Augusta is Quail Hollow. That's a track where Simpson has had success. His win at Olympic Club at the US Open came in tough scoring conditions, which I think players will encounter this week. And I think 35-1 is too big. And I think that's got to be a player this week, Dave.
Yeah, just sort of adding to that, I made a list of players who I thought would do well, and it came out far too long. He was on there, and a couple of filters I added in, trying to sort of separate them, was some Masters stuff that maybe doesn't get the attention that other Masters stats do. So bogey avoidance is a massive thing at Augusta.
Okay, that's interesting.
I mean, I've looked at this quite a lot. I think it's ridiculous. Something like 8 of the last 11 winners or something like that just had the fewest bogeys for the week, or, you know, bogeys plus double bogeys, the sort of bogey count, if you like. Dustin Johnson added to that last year, just made 4 bogeys all week. So even though people think, oh, it's how many birdies or the odd eagle you make on the par fives, it's limiting the mistakes. And other people might say it's all about the par five scoring. Not necessarily, because, you've got to do quite well on those, but basically it's about holding your own on the par fours and playing those holes well. If you look at Webb Simpson this season, he's first, or this might have changed, but this was on Sunday when I checked it. The Texas one could have altered it slightly, but ever so slightly if it did. He's first in bogey avoidance this season and second in par four performance. Mm. So he's got all the elements, plus everything you've said, to have a big Masters. I just think there's maybe just a feeling that he's not a Masters type, whatever that is. If you're playing maybe a fantasy game, stick him in, because he'd probably be less owned, won't he, than many of the top boys.
I think definitely, and I think you touch on a good point about him not being a Masters type necessarily, what people envisage as a Masters type, because you get the feeling that, you know, the rough's down and you can just bomb it with abandon here, really. And that's not his game, is he? He's more of a plotter, Webb Simpson. But I think the course conditions are a big leveler this week if it is fast and firm. I much prefer him in those sorts of conditions. But I think it's significant that he still showed that he can contend in a soft Masters as well. So I love those stats that you pinpointed there with Webb Simpson. They just enhance the confidence, I suppose. 35-1, I think, is a really good bet, given we are paying 9 places as well. Your sole selection in the outright market is, Dave?
Yeah, again, I'm looking at at the each way terms. We're best price at William Hill at 22-1 on Patrick Cantlay.
Okay, Cantlay, yeah, 22s.
I don't know if you watched any of the live from the Masters last night on telly.
Oh, I didn't see any of that.
Yeah, they brought quite a few of them in for interview, and they were just going around on the range interviewing them all. And Cantlay, I always had down as someone you wouldn't want to get stuck in a lift with. He just seems a rather dull sort of chap. But he spoke the best he's ever spoken. He seemed sort of, for him, ebullient about everything. But it wasn't just kind of words. It was sort of made a lot of sense. He said he'd been playing quite a bit with Fred Couples, who taught him some of the kind of things you need at Augusta. He said what he'd realised now is you don't have to play what you think is Masters golf. So everyone says, oh, you've got to be able to draw the ball. He said, it's a big old course. You can play your stock fade if you like. It's so wide open. There's room to play your game. We've seen other players down the years like Martin Keimer think, right, I must learn this draw, and it absolutely ruined him. Had a terrible record there, couldn't do it. But Cantlay, I mean, he's so good. It's not that even he's got a stock shot. He just says whatever my stock shot is on the day. So however he's feeling it, it might be a fade for him or a baby draw. So he's just comfortable playing with what he's got. He just sounded very, very comfortable. And a couple of quotes that he did say was he absolutely loves fast greens. He said, I love fast old school putting greens. It feels easy for me to make putts when it's like that. And I look forward to that every time I come here. I did just check that it wasn't just guff. it sounds good, doesn't it? I mean, he's won at Memorial on super fast greens at Muirfield Village. But yeah, in his four Masters, he's finished in the top five putting average in two of them. So he's got the stats to back it up. He's just a very, very solid player. And I think maybe this year, when it is kind of grind it out, stick your chin out, and you know, you want someone who's kind of got that low heartbeat and isn't going to get too excited and can handle everything. I mean, he's won the Shriners with single digits under par. On that, I might come onto that more later. But do you think it's going to be single digits under par, or there, you know, eight or nine under, maybe?
Yeah, I do. I do this week. Everything that I'm hearing about. I think we'll find out more, won't we, as the week progresses, maybe on Wednesday, when some of the... Lee Westwood's one that came out and said it's as tough as he's ever seen it, didn't he, basically? And yeah. You mentioned Adam Scott earlier. And these are guys with a wealth of experience at Augusta National. I do think it's going to be single digits under par that wins this week. And that makes it all the more fascinating for me. And It narrows down the field, in my opinion, as well. I know we've been talking about last year's Masters, but I think it did give the opportunity for the likes of Abraham Ancer, Cameron Smith and Sung Jae-im to produce brilliant golf, because it was more target golf than we're accustomed to at Augusta National. I think it narrows the field a little bit if it is faster and firmer.
Yeah, I mean, if you go with that line that it's single digits under par, and I think I probably am, then you look at Rory McIlroy, for example. He's got 32 wins and he's never won with anything harder than minus 12. I mean, so some of those wins are kind of counting double, but I think it's 18 PGA Tour wins, 14 in Europe. Some will be replicas because,
yeah.
You know, they count as both. But that's amazing. He's never won with anything harder than minus 12. So that immediately you think, oh, that's not ideal, is it, for Rory? Mm. You know, he likes that. You always think, you know, when it plays long and soft, it's good for him. So if you're a Rory McIlroy backer this week, and there are certainly reasons not to be, but if you are sticking to your guns anyway, this doesn't look like a good one for him. But I think Cantlay, as I said, he's won with a minus nine before. He's seventh in strokes gained around the green, which I think is very important this week. He is very in control of everything, and I think that's going to be one of the key factors this week. It's not going to be like wild making birdies and eagles and roars. It's going to be a lot more sort of steady than that, and I think he's a man you want on your side. And always makes cuts in majors. He nearly won this a couple of years ago, led on the back nine. Last year, shot a second round 66. He was in the top six at halfway. So he's had a couple of good looks. Augusta National, I just think it is a place where he will win at some point, and I think this year could be the one. So 22-1 gets me on board.
Yeah, I think you pick up on a good point as well with the thought that you used to have to draw the ball at Augusta National. That's not the case anymore. We've seen that in recent years, haven't we, of course, with Brooks Koepka producing top finishes here. John Rahm and Dustin Johnson, of course, they all hit that high, powerful fade off the tee, don't they? So I think that's a complete misnomer now, really.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. He's saying it's so, you know, it's so big, the course, it's so wide that you just go with what you've got. And he sounds like something's kind of clicked. Maybe it's the Fred Couples, obviously former Masters winner, 1992, that's just given him maybe this sort of confidence that he's now going to play his game rather than kind of, you know, impose his will on Augusta rather than just kind of cower from it and do what you think you should do.
Okay, good stuff. Patrick Cantlay, Dave's number one selection this week. I'm going with Daniel Berger, who I know you do like as well this week, Dave, yeah. For this at 33-1. I just loved how he closed it out at Pebble Beach earlier in the year, and He seems to be over the rib injury that troubled him in the last month or so. I just reckon he could be primed to win his first major championship. He's ranked 15th in the world now, which is kind of that sweet spot in the world rankings as well. And he's now got form at Augusta. And after missing the last two editions, not making the November one was a little bit silly, wasn't it, really? He will be, I think, chomping at the bit to get back here. I do think it's really significant that his best finish came on debut when he was 10th, and that was in that Masters that Danny Willett won in tough scoring conditions in 2016. Since then, he's logged another pair of top 35 finishes. And I was reading through Steve Bamford's column, Golf Betting System. They do some tremendous work on that website, and he does some really good stuff on strokes gained, which he breaks down into an 8-tournament window where you can like judge which players are trending in the right direction. And I thought it was very interesting and encouraging to see Berger was ranked in that time frame for the last 8 tournaments, 6th in strokes gained approach and 13th in strokes gained around the green. I think he's a wonderful putter as well, Berger. So if those things are on song, his approach play, his scrambling and his putting, he's got to have a good chance. And I thought he played really well in the match play. He won a couple of games before being knocked out at the first playoff hole by Erik van Rooyen and failed to get out of that group. And I just thought he was a tremendous each-way player at 33-1 with those 9 places this week, Dave. And he just looks primed and ready to win his first major. And I think he is the sort of player that can grind his way to a win at the top level as well, Dave.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And the other thing maybe you can add, you do get a lot of players from like the southeast of the United States who win this. Maybe just the weather conditions, whether it means a bit more to them, I don't know. But you've seen Bubba from the south, from Florida, Dustin Johnson, South Carolina. Berger's a sort of Florida boy through and through. So he will, you know, absolutely love this. Yeah, I mean, I kind of backed him, really, but you put him up. I'm just going with a few different things on this podcast, but I could easily throw Berger in there, yeah.
Yeah, Daniel Berger trading at 33-1 this week. Just got one more selection in the outright, and it's probably my smallest player. I'll go a point each way in all three, but I think if there's one player towards the top of the betting who, in my opinion, is overpriced, it's Brooks Koepka, and I'm going to throw him in at 28-1 this week. Of course, there has to be a question about his recovery from the knee surgery, which in such a short space of time, I think it was just only, well, under a month since he's had the knee surgery. But in my opinion, that's definitely built into the price this week. He had looked rejuvenated with that grandstand finish when winning in Phoenix. That was followed by a brilliant performance at the WGC Concessions behind Colin Morikawa. Both those finishes were built on incredible iron play, and we know that Koepka can bring that to Augusta National as well. 11th, 2nd and 7th in his last 3 starts at the course advertises that. And throughout his career, Koepka has been known as the man that defies the doubters. It would clearly take a Herculean effort, but I wouldn't put that past Koepka. And at 28-1, I thought he was the one at the top of the betting, in my opinion, that was overpriced. So I'll throw him in as the third selection, Dave.
Yeah, this is one of the ones where maybe it'll turn out to be sort of bad information from me. But obviously, I've been lucky enough to have been to 4 Masters.
Yeah.
Get that in there. having walked the course, there's some massively steep downhill bits that you might not see on the telly. And I just sort of fear for him after 4 days of that. I mean, again, you might not see it on the telly. The downhill walk from the 6th is ridiculous. The 11th is a massive hike to get up to the 11th tee. And then obviously it's a long way downhill to Amen Corner. There's some really steep stuff going on out there. He said his problem is going downhill.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say that, well, okay, he'll be in a bit of pain and he'll wince. And so what, Tiger won a US Open on one leg. It's just, it adds a bit of, I'd want everything more in my favour, I think. I know you're taking a punt because what, if he was fit, what would he be, 16s or something?
In this sort of form, maybe even shorter than that.
Yeah.
Maybe 14, 12 to 1 alongside Rahm and Thomas potentially.
Yeah, if he'd had a good week of late. I think I'd rather back him for first round leader or something like that before it really kicks in.
That's a fair comment. That is a fair comment. I get what you're saying as well, because I think that's something Butch Harmon's referenced, isn't it? He says that Koepka in practice is swinging the club absolutely brilliantly. He's worried about the walking. And that could certainly be a factor, but I do think that is definitely factored into the price personally.
Yeah,
I'll just
bring
up the first round leader market. Obviously, draw's not been made, I don't think, as we speak here on Tuesday, well, early afternoon now. Koepka's 33-1 to be first round leader. That's that could be a player.
Interesting. Yeah,
comes out firing on Thursday.
Well, you've seen him start fast in majors before, so definitely one to look at. They showed him on Live from the Range last night, and unless you knew about it, you would have thought there was nothing wrong with him at all. He was swinging it great. But that's obviously just stood still, whacking it on the practice ground. It's when you start having to walk, I don't know, it was enough to put me off anyway.
Yeah, I can see that, but you're probably getting 14 points built into the price with that surgery. So I like him at 28-1 as my third and final selection. Should we talk through a couple of the market principles before we look at the supporting markets?
Yeah, well, into the other really.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, Dustin Johnson's 9-1. Just not quite in the same sort of form he was when he won in November.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he had a poor Florida swing. He didn't do anything at the match play. His putting is definitely way below. I saw some stat about, you know, how many strokes gained in his previous events leading up to in November, and it was all very good. And this time he's losing quite a few. And do you win back-to-back Masters? Only three have done it. Nicholas Woods and Faldo. That's pretty elite company. He's not for me this week.
Jordan Spieth, 11-1. Who'd have thought this back in January, Dave, when he was in danger of slipping outside the world's top 100? What an amazing renaissance he's enjoyed, and it came to fruition last week when he won the Valero Texas Open. Spieth, I think he's only been beaten by 15 players in his Masters history. He's the one at the top of the market, I can see being popular this week, and I can see him winning as well.
Yeah, well, do you want me to go into my hashtag Euros?
Yeah, please do.
Because there's a couple of them involving Spieth. So the one I like, I mean, you could just back Spieth at 11s, which is fine. But I think this is the major where it's more predictable in terms of who you get in the top 5 and 10. So I'm going to go with one of the hashtag Your Odds specials. You have to scroll quite a long way down the page to get to it. It's 45-1, and it's Jordan Spieth to win and Justin Thomas to have a top 5.
Yeah, like that.
It just seems to add an awful lot to the basic Spieth win price. I know you could be furious if Spieth wins and Thomas finishes 6th, you know, I hope. 45-1. All you've said about Spieth, I mean, there's something magical about him, isn't there? There really is, and especially at this place, I can't just think he's going to be a one-time Masters winner. I think, you know, he'll win, you know, two or three, like Mickelson maybe. And I think this is a golden chance for him to get the other one. He's in absolutely prime form, having won in Texas. And I also liked his emotional reaction to that. He didn't sort of break down and collapse to his knees and think, this all that work, this journey I've been on. He just sort of went, all right, okay, I've won that one. It didn't hit him as much as he thought, because I think his underlying feeling must have been, well, I'm an excellent player. I should be winning events like this. Yeah, I think he's a major winner. Got an extraordinary record, as you say, at this course. So I think at the top end of the market, he's the one I'd be on, and therefore, can you do something else with it? And I think Justin Thomas would be my second pick at the top of the market. So Rahm will come on to a minute, but you know, he could go either way with the new baby. it adds a bit of uncertainty. But I think Justin Thomas is absolutely prime for a big week. You look at his Masters finishes, he gets better every time. He was fourth last time. And in terms of playing hard courses, well, he's got three wins in single digits under par. He won the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow, which you referenced as a good correlating course. He won that with 8 under, won the CJ Cup with 9 under. He's won a Honda Classic in firm conditions with 8 under. So, you know, bring it on. If it's difficult, Justin Thomas will do fine. So I can easily see if Spieth does win, then who else will be in that top five? I can absolutely see Thomas being one of them. And I think 45-1 is a big old price for that.
Very good.
That combination.
That's in the hashtag Your Odds section on the William Hill Sportsbook and on the app at williamhill.com. You can tweet your bet to @WilliamHill using that hashtag Your Odds, and the traders will price it up. The other Your Odds that we, we've combined with one of them, haven't we? But are there any others that you like away from that 45-1 just before we get to our one that we've combined with?
Yeah, and it's easy because it also involves Spieth and Thomas again, so I've already made the case for them. This one is a top 10 with Spieth, Thomas, and the addition of Patrick Reed. That's 9-1 for those three. Spieth, Thomas, and Reed all to have a top 10, all major winners. So just in terms of Reed, what he can bring to the party, obviously he's won the Masters before. Brilliant short game, so he won't be fazed by the lightning greens. And again, he's won in tough conditions. He won the Cadillac 1 year with 4 under, which is impressive. Won the Barclays with 9 under. So he won't be one who needs soft conditions or anything. Patrick Reed won at Torrey Pines, didn't he, earlier this year? I always think he's a bit underrated, always in the prices. Yeah. You could look at him in the outrights, but I think I'm going to tag him on for top 10. It gives a bit more leeway for Spieth and Thomas, and I just think Reed can be part of that as well. So those three to have a top 10 at 9-1.
Very good. Those are two of Dave's Your Odds. We put one together for you as well, which is at the top of the Your Odds section. And I've gone with Daniel Berger to finish in the top 10. I'm keen on Berger this week. And you've thrown Paul Casey in there, top 10s, including ties. And that's a nice price at 12-1 for those two. I mean, they can't all finish in the top 10, can they? But Berger and Casey is the one we've come up with at 12-1.
Well, they could all finish in the top 10 if they're all tied.
Well, that would be nice, wouldn't it? That would be a dream scenario.
He's an Augusta specialist. He's got loads of great form here. Interestingly, with Adam Scott saying, that he can't remember it being this firm and fast since 2007. I had a quick look. Casey was 10th in 2007. So that bodes quite well.
He's arguably in the form of his career, isn't he, at the moment, really?
Yeah. I mean, he won in Dubai. That's been a good pointer, hasn't it, in recent years? Will it and Sergio both won in Dubai before coming on to win this. And then he was 5th at Pebble, 10th at Bay Hill, 5th at the Players. Tons of good form. He's also won, he won the Valspar, didn't he, with minus 10 and minus 9 in back-to-back years in Florida. So another one who performs great on tough courses. So yeah, I wanted to get him on board in some way. And the fact that you've put him in with Berger, one of my definite likes this week, is perfect. So I like that. Berger and Casey, top 10, 12-1.
Check out all those hashtag Your Odds available. There's loads of supporting markets as well. A couple of bets that I like in the supporting markets. I'm actually going into the top continental European player market and taking on John Rahm at the top end there at 11-10. There are distractions for Rahm this week. I don't think he's been in... I mean, it's silly to say it because he's in terms of his finishing positions, he's been in good form, but didn't think he was in fine touch at the match play. And I actually thought he was kind of fortunate to escape from his group, didn't play well in the group stages, then ran into a red-hot Scottie Scheffler before being dumped out. I like Sergio Garcia in this market at 9-2. He was on my mind, and I think there's enough juice in the price if you want an outright bet on Garcia as well. Victor Hovland's short game is going to be severely tested this week. He's not got that much Augusta experience, and Garcia's just firing all cylinders. I thought some of his iron play at the WGC Dell Tech match play was stunning. His major championship record has dipped since he won the Masters back in 2017, but he seems to be somewhere near his best as far as I'm concerned. He's a winner on tour this season, having won the Sanderson Farms. Picked up 7 strokes on approach in a dismal putting week at the WGC at Concessions, but his ball striking slightly hidden there because he finished down the field. 9th at the Players after that, 8 shots he picked up on approach, and I think he'll run big this week, Garcia, and I'm going to play him in that market. 9 players in that market, so you could even go each way if you wanted to, but I'll play just a win-only bet, Sergio Garcia, at 9-2 in that market, and I don't mind him at 15-8 for top Spaniard as well, with John Rahm 2-5 in that betting market. So focus on Garcia in one of the supporting markets there, Dave.
That's quite funny because I've had a bet in that top continental Europe.
Oh, have you?
It's not Sergio.
Who have you gone for in that market then?
I've gone for Victor Perez.
Yeah.
He's 12-1. I just thought with 3 places and 5th the odds, I thought he was a bit of an each way bet to nothing because, as you've gone through, there's people like Olazabal and Stenson and Langer who you're rolling out. Biesberger's not bringing much to the table at the minute. You've said about Hovland and Rahm, the doubts. Yeah, Sergio could be a big runner this week, but it's just a bit odd, isn't it? His majors record has crashed.
Yeah, it is bizarre.
What might help him a little bit, he obviously missed the November Masters with COVID. So he's not had that kind of strange experience that everyone else had. I don't know if that'll help. I don't know. But I thought there was enough doubts for to have a little bet on Perez in that one for me. But anyway, I won't put you off.
Yeah, OK. And the other supporting market that I like the look of was the top 20 finish. And one name that stands out to me in this market at 11-4 is Max Homer. I think that's a decent price. He's one of those lacking experience, which is the negative. But the two courses that we've mentioned that correlate well with Augusta historically are Quail Hollow. Rory McIlroy has superb form there and at Augusta National as well. And maybe even more so Riviera, which can play really fast and firm. Adam Scott and Bubba Watson, obviously the pair that have stand out, that have tasted success at both venues. And Homer talked about the enormity of his win in what was his, it's kind of like his national open, isn't it, Riviera, the LA Open, what he achieved there. And there was always going to be a possibility he might just slightly relax after that, but he played decently at Concessions and at Bay Hill too, where he finished 10th. And he fired a 70 around here on his debut. I take a positive from that. And I think fast and firm conditions play perfectly for him because of those 2 wins have come on difficult layouts. And I think he's more than capable of finishing inside the top 20. And I like that price of 11-4 on Max Homer. He was one of those further down the list that caught my eye anyway, Dave.
Yeah, all good. I mean, there's so many bets you can have, isn't there?
Yeah.
On the hashtag your odds, I've noticed the compilers keep chucking in Tyrrell Hatton as part of the deal. But I'm staying away from those. I mean, it might prove to be that he has a good Masters, but his record's horrendous, isn't it, at this course?
It's bizarrely bad, though, isn't it? That he's one of those that if he had any sort of course form, he'd be a much shorter price in the outright market, wouldn't he, clearly? Because, what, is he ranked 5th in the world?
Yeah.
And he's 40-1, and he's way down the betting, isn't he? So he's kind of one of those that falls into the Koepka bracket for me, that if you just want to take a real chance that his course form is going to suddenly see an upturn, he could be a massive price, couldn't he, in the outright market, just based on world ranking and quality, basically.
Yeah. I mean, if there's so many hashtag your odds, which is great, and there's a number of them I like the look of, but the ones I would be wary of are any that involve Hatton, and all the ones that say someone will shoot, you know, 63 or lower. That's not happening for me this week.
I don't think we're going to get an all 4 rounds in the 60s this week, are we?
No. So those are the ones I'd steer clear of. But as you know, you can scroll down forever and find something you like in there. And I've obviously found a few.
We've not mentioned numerous players at the top of the betting, like Bryson DeChambeau's not been mentioned on the podcast. We only touched on Rory McIlroy briefly. Xander Schauffele has not been mentioned. Colin Morikawa, Lee Westwood. Are there any others you just want to quickly throw a line on, either at shorter or bigger prices, just before we wrap up with the selections this week, Dave?
It's just on DeChambeau. It was funny watching him last night. He had this practice drill where he'd just smashed one, and you think, okay, right, he'll take stock, breathe out a little bit. But someone just sort of threw him the next ball and he hit it straight away. It was like throwing meat to a lion. It was ridiculous. it was almost like you were watching it on like sort of an old black and white film sped up, because he's got this ridiculous sort of move after he swung it. And then he's like, next. And then he did another one. It was just like comical. And you're thinking, I don't know, keep doing that, mate, and you'll put your back out on one of these. Just didn't sort of steady himself. I think it is part of he's doing it deliberately. He's not just sort of trying to just get through a bucket quickly. It's part of his training. But I don't know. I mean, the thing with him as well, do you read anything into last time when he said he had vertigo and things like that and he didn't feel right?
I don't know. He seems to have resolved those issues, doesn't he? But
did that play a part in him playing rubbish last time?
But yeah, perhaps it did. So you're saying that maybe that wasn't his true form at Augusta National, and he could well perform. I'm just not sure about course conditions for DeChambeau this week. If he didn't quite do it on those fast and those softish conditions, is it going to be good for him, a fast and firm Masters? I'm not so sure. He's kind of the one of the betting that I'd really want to swerve this week, the top end of the market.
Yeah, I mean, just quickly glossing over them, I'm not a fan of Rory. Koepka I'm worried about. I think Morikawa might need a run at Augusta. Westwood could top 10 quite easily.
He's short though, isn't he, Westwood, I think?
Yeah, he's 30-1, you know. If he'd made a decision after he'd become European number one back in January, he would have got 80s and 100s and razor prices. But obviously, you're paying the price for him doing really well in Florida recently. Berger, obviously, I like. I like Matt Fitzpatrick a lot, 45-1. I think he's got the kind of magic short game. I can see him just holding a load of par putts when everyone's missing them for bogey. So I think he'll go well. I think Matt Kuchar at 80-1, if there's someone further down the list, so many good performances, he should benefit from a fast running Augusta, and he's just banging form again, isn't he, after being nowhere for a while. He could do him for a top 10 or each way top 9.
One name that I think might go well at, you know, a first round leader bet, and I don't know if he'll sustain it throughout the 4 days, but he's not playing as badly as he's being made out stats-wise anyway. How do you think Phil Mickelson will do this week?
Yeah, I mean, he's sort of done all right, and he can get away with a lot more, which is one of his things at Augusta, because he can, you know, wide off the tee, low branches that you can hit underneath. And I think there are some hashtag yards where it requires a Mickelson top 20. I could see him finishing in the top 20, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, shall we wrap up, Dave? Thank you.
I think so. You feel like you want to go through them all.
Yeah,
we could
sit here and talk for 90 minutes, but I know nobody wants that, so we won't do that now.
We like to go on a walk, you know.
That's true.
Sometimes you want to extend the walk.
Yeah.
I thought you'd have some sort of bet on Justin Rose because you like him, don't you?
Yeah,
Have you read that he's been there for 3 weeks?
I've not read that, no.
And he's basically, you know, he hasn't played any. He just thought he's going to focus everything on this Masters and been playing a load of practice rounds.
That's interesting.
And I remember that 2007 Masters. I was on him at 125-1. It's hard to believe that year. He'd won in Australia the previous winter, and he was 125s, and he got to within a stroke, I think, and then he hit a tree on the 17th, and so his ball sort of went backwards. Mm. He did get a share of fifths, but he's another one who can play well in hard, fast conditions if you want some sort of side bet.
Do you think he'll be rusty competitively?
There's obviously that, isn't there?
Yeah, he's... only decent performance in the last 6 months possibly came at the PGA Championship when he finished ninth, but that was just built around. It was that day he had just he just hauled everything, didn't he? It was a very. He's been very unjust in Rose like in the last 6 months, hasn't he?
He was runner up in Saudi, which wasn't bad.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's maybe just more of a warning to say, if you see him in a match, but don't just laugh and, oh,
yeah.
Oh, maybe they can't.
Okay, let's spin through the selections then. I'll kick things off with my bets for the Masters and a little bit of a staking plan here as well. I'm going to go a point each way on all three outright selections. Webb Simpson at 35-1, Daniel Berger at 33-1, and Brooks Koepka at 28-1. I'll play a point win Sergio Garcia, top continental European, at 9-2, and 2 points on Max Homer to finish in the top 20 at 11-4. And obviously, myself and Dave will have a point between us on that Berger and Casey top 10, including the ties there, at 12-1. Dave, your bets for this week?
Yeah, so you've obviously taken care of the Berger Casey one. So on the outrights, I'll play a point and a half each way on Patrick Cantlay at 22s. I shall have a point on the Spieth wins Thomas top 5 at 45-1. Then I'll have 2 points on the 9-1 shot. That is Spieth, Thomas, and Reed all have a top 10.
Very good. You just cut out there at the end. So can you just recap that top 10 finish one, Dave, very quickly on the hashtag Your Odds?
Yes, I'll have the 9-1 on Spieth, Thomas and Reed all to have a top 10.
Very good. Thank you for your company, Dave. Do check out Dave's Twitter page as well. Loads of golf content going on there, at Dave Tindall Golf. You can have a look at mine as well. Less golf content going up on my Twitter handle, at D Kellner. Are you going to be glued to the television all 4 days this year? I know you've been there 4 times in the past, Dave, and it won't be quite the same, but are you going to watch every shot this week?
Absolutely, and the app's fantastic, isn't it? You can see your player, every shot your player hits.
That's true. It's one of those immersive experiences, isn't it, on the app? I know they tried to do a similar thing for the players, but the Masters just has it, they have it down, don't they, basically?
Yeah. I absolutely can't wait. I mean, we have this debate sometimes. This is my favourite tournament of the year. Sorry, the Open, which is a gallant second, but this is my favourite.
Oh, I'm the Open Championship and then the Masters second favourite, so a bit of balance there. Thank you, Dave, for your company.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened. I do hope you've enjoyed it. Don't forget, check out all the markets at williamhill.com and on the app. We're top price on the top 10 in the betting, plus we are paying 9 places each way. We've got all those supporting markets and hashtag Your Odds too. Enjoy it, folks. It should be spectacular. 4 days at Augusta National Golf Club for this year's Masters.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.